They have very offensive systems in mind, and I think the nuclear weapons play a role in that.
UN Security Council set to vote on new North Korea sanctions. It's Tuesday, September 12th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a Taiwan teacher on trial in China. Rohingya plight called genocide by some. India to assist Afghan forces. Health news and a marathon space voyage. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United Nations Security Council is set to vote on a new round of economic sanctions against North Korea in response to its continuing nuclear program and missile tests. The draft resolution is considerably watered down from what the Americans put forward a week ago and follows intense negotiations with Russia and China, which both have veto powers in the Council. The new draft, due to be voted on in the coming hours, removes an oil embargo against North Korea that the United States was seeking and replaces it with a cap at current levels of crude oil exports to North Korea. China has been very reluctant to take any drastic measures that might potentially collapse North Korea's economy. The new draft places a travel ban on a member of the Workers' Party of Korea's Central Military Commission and freezes the assets of the commission, which commands and controls North Korea's military and directs the country's military defense industries. It also keeps a ban on North Korean textiles. Last year, the country's textile industry brought in nearly $1 billion in revenue. The resolution was drafted by the United States in response to Pyongyang's sixth underground nuclear test September 3rd, which is believed to have been the regime's first hydrogen bomb. Meanwhile, former U.S. Ambassador to South Korea Christopher Hill says North Korea's current leader does not seem to be interested in any talks on denuclearization. Hill was a part of the U.S. negotiation team in earlier six-party talks aimed at getting the communist country to halt its nuclear weapons program in exchange for aid and energy. In an interview with VOA's Mandarin service, the former ambassador also said the United States needs a stronger diplomatic team to tackle these issues. Zlatika Hoke reports.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has conducted more missile launches than either his father or his grandfather. Former U.S. Ambassador to South Korea, Christopher Hill, told VOA via Skype that Kim Jong-un appears to be a belligerent leader.
He does not take any responsibility for the fact that North Korea in September 2005 did agree to abandon all their nuclear programs.
Hill says it is naive to think that North Korea has been working on developing nuclear weapons for the past 50 years for defense purposes.
They have very offensive systems in mind, and I think the nuclear weapons play a role in that. And I think ultimately what they are trying to do is to create a circumstance where they can succeed in getting the U.S. off the Korean Peninsula, and then they think they could actually unify it on their terms.
The U.S. diplomat says the United States has never agreed, nor should it, to negotiate over joint military drills with South Korea, as suggested by China and Russia. In his own talks with North Korean diplomats, he said he explained that North Korea should not worry about being attacked.
All of the scenarios for all of those exercises start with the premise that North Korea has invaded South Korea, not that South Korea has invaded North Korea. So I explained that these exercises are defensive, and I told the North Koreans my only regret is that we didn't have those exercises in the summer of 1950.
With regard to a North Korean missile test, he says the United States should use missile defense only as a last resort.
The North Koreans can get information about our trajectories and how our missiles work. So I think we might want to save that for something, for a moment where we feel that the North Korean missile in question is a direct threat.
Hill says the United States should join forces with China and North Korea's other neighbors to find a diplomatic means to get Pyongyang to stop its nuclear programs. But he says a summit between the U.S. and the Chinese presidents should be well prepared.
And it would not be prepared if Trump arrived and sat down and just started talking about North Korea. There needs to be a diplomatic mission earlier, of the kind that Kissinger performed in China in anticipation of President Nixon's visit.
The former diplomat said the United States Department currently lacks a competent team to work on these important issues, and it is critical to form one as soon as possible. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
North Korea warned earlier Monday that the United States will pay a, quote, heavy price if the UN Security Council approves more sanctions against Pyongyang. The Trump administration has said all options are on the table in dealing with North Korea, including a military response. The president has warned that any North Korean threat against the United States or its allies will be met with a harsh response. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. South Korea supports tough sanctions against North, but not tactical nukes. China trial of Taiwanese activist highlights discrepancy in democratization and rule of law. UN human rights protections threatened by growing authoritarianism. Maldives suspends a third of its lawyers. Indian kidney traders smuggle donors to Egypt to beat strict donation rules. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, we invite you to stop by our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A Taiwan teacher and rights and democracy activist confessed Monday at a trial in China to attempting to subvert the Beijing government. The one-day trial of Li Mengqi took place after he disappeared soon after arriving on the mainland in March. Authorities later acknowledged they had taken into custody on suspicion of damaging national security, and in a video released of his comments, Li said he accepted the charge of subversion and expressed regret in an appearance at the Intermediate People's Court in Yueyang City in central Hunan province. He said he spread malicious attacks that defamed the Chinese Communist Party and China's government and China's current political system. And he says, I incited the subversion of state power. His wife was present in the courtroom. Before leaving Taiwan, she warned her husband's supporters he might be coerced into pleading guilty. In Australia, Monash University Asian Studies Professor Emeritus Bruce Jacobs tells VOA's Victor Beatty Li's disappearance and arrest came as a surprise.
He had been to China before. There had been no indication there were any difficulties. And this time he was arrested. You know, he just disappeared. And as you say, the Chinese later acknowledged that they had him. But he's been basically held incommunicado for 6 months. So there's been great concern in Taiwan about his welfare and what's going to happen.
Is he a political pawn in the ongoing tensions between Taiwan and the mainland?
Well, he may be a pawn. When you say the tensions between Taiwan and the mainland, I mean, I think we need to state very clearly that any tensions between Taiwan and the mainland come from the mainland side. They're not created from Taiwan at all. And I think that has to be stated explicitly.
His wife, Li Qingyu, who along with his mother are now in China, said Saturday before she left that his supporters would forgive her husband if he says something in court which disappoints them, as he might be required to give testimony against his own free will.
I think what she was saying was that she asked that his supporters be forgiving if he said things which didn't seem consistent with what he'd said in the past. And the point was that in that court situation, he may not have free will to speak as he might wish to.
Rights groups and the Taiwan government have tried to gain his release. Will they be successful?
Well, that depends on China. It's not clear. I understand that a semi-government organization has hired a lawyer to go with his wife to give her advice, but not to act on behalf of her husband. As we know from past experience, these court-appointed lawyers from China really have limited ability to do any real defense. I think this has been a case which is creating a lot of difficulty across the Taiwan Straits, and if China really wants to have good relations with Taiwan, It can't just be arresting and confining Taiwan citizens. If, in fact, the government in China is not happy with particular people coming to China, it can forbid their entry, but it shouldn't let them in and then arrest them on flimsy charges.
Bruce Jacobs described current cross-strait relations as not the best. He said Beijing is trying to pressure on the more independent-minded democratic progressive government of Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen, who came to power nearly 18 months ago. China, which views Taiwan as part of its territory, has cut off communications with Taipei. Jacobs said the Taiwan government was overwhelmingly elected and Beijing should be working with the governments elected by the people. Happening now in Asia, India will provide more assistance to Afghan defense forces and implement new development projects in the war-torn country. The announcement came at the first high-level meeting between the two countries after U.S. President Donald Trump unveiled a new Afghan strategy. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happier with us today on VOA Asia. The United Nations Human Rights Chief has joined the growing chorus of international voices condemning Myanmar for the wave of violence forcing scores of minority Rohingya Muslims to flee across the border to Bangladesh. We have more on the rising tide against Myanmar and its leader from VOA Asia's Ira Melman.
The UN Human Rights Chief said Monday that the violence and injustice faced by the ethnic Rohingya minority in Myanmar, where UN rights investigators have been barred from entering, seem a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Zeid was speaking at the start of a UN Human Rights Council session chronicling human rights concerns about Myanmar.
We have received multiple reports and satellite imagery of security forces and local militia burning Rohingya villages and consistent accounts of extrajudicial killings, including shooting fleeing civilians.
Zeid denounced what he said was another brutal security operation underway in Rakhine State, this time apparently on a far greater scale. He noted the UN Refugee Agency says 270,000 people from Myanmar have fled to neighboring Bangladesh in the last 3 weeks alone, and pointed to satellite imagery and reports of security forces and local militia burning Rohingya villages and committing extrajudicial killings.
The Myanmar government should stop pretending that the Rohingyas are setting fire to their own homes and laying waste to their own villages. This complete denial of reality is doing great damage to the international standing of a government which until recently benefited from immense goodwill. I call on the government to end its current cruel military operation with accountability for all violations that have occurred and to reverse the pattern of severe and widespread discrimination against the Rohingya population.
Zeid said he was further appalled by reports that Myanmar authorities had planted landmines along the border. Andrea Gittleman is the program manager at the Center for the Prevention of Genocide, part of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum here in Washington. Andrea, tell us how you and the museum have become involved in this whole situation in Myanmar.
Well, we at the museum Center for the Prevention of Genocide are very concerned about mass atrocities around the world. Burma, or Myanmar, is one of those countries that has come to our attention because of the long-standing risk to the Rohingya population. In 2015, staff from the Simon Scott Center for the Prevention of Genocide traveled to Rakhine State in western Burma, and we were alarmed by what we saw.
What did you find?
Well, we visited in 2015, and there we saw the effects of long-standing persecution against a community that had been cut off from their neighbors, Rohingya Muslims who were forced into displacement camps just because of who they were. We saw people who were unable to access health care, access education, again, simply because of their religion and ethnicity.
A few years ago, the Holocaust Museum awarded Aung San Suu Kyi, now the leader of Myanmar, with the Elie Wiesel Award. Now, Aung San Suu Kyi has been almost unbelievably silent about this entire situation. Why do you think that is, and how can that be rectified, if it can?
Well, Aung San Suu Kyi, as the de facto leader of her country, needs to speak out against military attacks on civilians. She and her party have the ultimate responsibility to protect all civilians in the country. The Holocaust Museum awarded her the Elie Wiesel Award because she upheld those values of confronting hatred, of preventing genocide, and therefore we would call on her to embody those values today and to speak out forcefully against attacks on civilians in her country.
Andrea Gittleman is the program manager at the Center for the Prevention of Genocide, part of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington.
And that was VOA Asia's Ira Melman. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the Dalai Lama, the exiled Tibetan spiritual leader, has again called on his fellow Nobel Peace Prize recipient Aung San Suu Kyi to peacefully end the Rohingya crisis. The Dalai Lama also warned Suu Kyi and other Myanmar leaders that not resolving the crisis peacefully could lead to further unrest and destruction. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, India will provide more assistance to Afghan defense forces and implement new development projects in the war-torn country. The announcement came at the first high-level meeting held between the two countries after U.S. President Donald Trump unveiled a new Afghan strategy in which he called on India to step up its role in Afghanistan. A joint statement issued Monday in New Delhi said the Afghan and Indian foreign ministers have agreed to strengthen security cooperation, and India will extend assistance for the Afghan forces to fight terrorism, organized crime, trafficking of narcotics, and money laundering. Afghanistan has long pressed for greater Indian assistance in defense supplies and capacity building as it struggles to fight Taliban insurgents who have taken swaths of territory. Although India provides economic aid to Kabul, it's been more measured in giving military assistance, wary that Pakistan has resisted a greater role for India in Afghanistan. The two countries have said they would cooperate in overcoming challenges posed by Islamic terror groups. Both India and Afghanistan have long accused Pakistan of sheltering terror groups that mount attacks in their countries. Our thanks to Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi for sending us this story. This news alert from VOA Asia, the United Nations Human Rights Chief has joined the growing chorus of international voices, condemning Myanmar for the wave of violence forcing scores of minority Rohingya Muslims to flee into Bangladesh. Amnesty International on Sunday charged Myanmar with deliberately targeting Rohingya. Top stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, preventing concussions in professional U.S.-style football and a young cancer crusader. Highlight this week in health news with VOA Asia's David Byrd.
Hi, everyone. From the Voice of America in Washington, I'm David Byrd, and here's a look at what's happening in health news. The National Football League has begun its season, and preventing concussions has become a big issue in the game. As George Putich tells us, some researchers are looking for new ways to diagnose and treat concussions faster and better.
During the past 10 to 15 years, research on head injuries has accelerated because of heightened awareness about the long-term consequences of concussions suffered by soldiers, athletes, and traffic accident victims. The clinical director of the Brain Trauma Research Center at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Dr. David Okonkwo, says one of the biggest challenges is getting a quick and reliable diagnosis.
We're getting very close to a blood test that will highlight people in the early minutes to hours following a concussion.
Okonkwo says the ability to diagnose and understand the consequences of a concussion and to target treatment to an individual patient is much better than 10 years ago and ahead of public awareness of the advances. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
At first glance, Stephen Litt looks like any normal 12-year-old. But as Bronwyn Benito found out, His extracurricular activities could one day benefit those facing cancer.
Stephen Litt is like many other American 12-year-olds. He has a busy calendar full of sports, music lessons, and homework. When he was in first grade, Stephen began entering science fairs. By sixth grade, he was ready to get serious.
So I thought to myself, well, what about cancer? Cancer would be cool. And I knew a few people, family, friends who had cancer and friends' parents. So I was like, okay, I have motivation for this. I have an experiment to do. Now let's figure out what I can do.
His research led him to planarians, a type of flatworm, and EGCG, an antioxidant found in green tea, shown to decrease cancer cell growth. Planarians can regenerate amputated parts of their bodies, and Stephen found that bathing the worms in EGCG slowed their regeneration. His work began getting media attention, but he was already thinking about phase three, and that would require a professional lab. Stephen and his parents turned to the National Cancer Institute in Washington, where researcher Dr. Stanley Lipkowitz offered Stephen a chance to present his work and learn about theirs. With Dr. Lipkowitz's advice and some inventive new ideas to expand his research, Stephen is gearing up for the next science fair. Bronwyn Benito, VOA News.
If you would like to learn more about these stories, visit our webpage, voanews.com. And you can see video versions on our Facebook page. That's VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
Just over 40 years ago, U.S. President Jimmy Carter was spending his first year in office, and the country was mourning the death of the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley, all as NASA launched two small spacecraft hoping to learn more about Jupiter, Saturn, and Saturn's moon Titan. They were expected to last just over 3 years. VOA's George Puditz tells us beyond all expectations, Voyager 1 and its sister spacecraft, Voyager 2, are still communicating with mission control back on Earth.
Voyager 1 was launched from Cape Canaveral in Florida on September 5, 1977, 16 days after the launch of its sister spacecraft, Voyager 2. The switch was made because Voyager 1 was to be first to reach Jupiter and Saturn, their main area of exploration. One of the iconic images sent by Voyager 1 became known as the Pale Blue Dot, a picture of our own planet seen from the distance of about 6 billion kilometers. Another was the first picture of a volcanic eruption elsewhere in space, on Jupiter's moon Io. After exploring Jupiter and then Saturn, the two space probes continued past Uranus and Neptune, sending home more scientific data. Scientists hoped that they would reach the edge of the solar system, more than 10 billion kilometers away.
We reached that with Voyager 1, and we're about to reach it with Voyager 2.
Instruments designed to measure the solar wind will now turn to the mysterious interstellar wind.
So we will have a chance with that instrument to actually measure the wind for the first time directly.
As digital sound carriers were not yet invented, both spacecraft carry a gold-plated gramophone record with pictures and sounds characteristic of the Earth, together with an explanation on how to play them back. The Voyager spacecraft owed their longevity to their small nuclear thermoelectric generators that will provide power to return data for at least another decade. It will still take more than 40,000 years for them to reach the nearest stars in the constellations of Ursa Minor and Andromeda. By that time, they may represent the only traces of human civilization. George Puticch, VOA News, Washington.
And if you want an interesting sidebar to the Voyager spacecraft, check out the very first Star Trek movie. Yeah, that was an interesting theme twist. We like to thank everybody who's listening to us in Tainan, Taiwan via the Voice of Chungrung Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. Thanks for being with us today. You can always find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can take our program with us, or with you, rather, as a podcast. And, of course, you can always find us at voanews.com and visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia. You can send us a message there as well. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Daryl Smith, managing editor, Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Ira Melman, David Byrd, and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.